Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBerka Butler is here with us to bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Happy Wednesday, Jonathan.
Happy Wednesday, Sean.
Happy Wednesday indeed. Right, Japan we're going to first, and this man has been acquitted of murder after 46 years.
Yes, an extraordinary story. This is the story of 88-year-old Iwao Hakamada. He was found guilty in 1968 of killing four people, right? This is his boss, the boss's wife, and their two teenage children, right? This happened in a place called Shizuoka, which is a suburb in western Tokyo. And the murder itself took place in 1966. Now, the boss was the owner of a miso processing plant, right? Mm. And this murder occurred. The four victims' house was set on fire, right? But when the forensics went in after, or whatever they were called back in the 1960s, I'm sure it was the same thing, they discovered that these people had been stabbed and then the house was set on fire,
yeah.
Right? So what appears to have happened is that this particular individual had this crime pinned on him. There was some evidence found around him, and that evidence was his clothing, right? And there was bloodstains on that clothing, allegedly. Now, those bloodstains were always in doubt, okay? But the authorities pinned this evidence on him. They managed to get him into a cell, extract a confession out of him. He says it was under duress.
Mm-hmm.
And he was then sentenced to death and was on death row from 1968 until 2014, when his retrial was called, right? So the judge basically said that the evidence that was brought forward was questionable, okay? It's since they seem to think now what's happened is that the police basically set it up, right? It was something to do with the bloodstains. They hadn't discoloured in a fashion that would be relevant to the way they should have discoloured, mm. right? So it brought the evidence into doubt. So that back in 2014, they said, okay, well, we're going to let you out pending this retrial. And he's lived with his sister ever since. His sister is 91, would you believe?
Huh.
And he's 88. And he was acquitted last Thursday. So it's an extraordinary story.
Now, is this just all because the wheels of Japanese justice move extraordinarily slowly, that he was on death row for decades? What was preventing them going ahead with the
execution?
Yeah,
it's a good question, to be honest with you. I don't know. I think... I'm not 100% sure. The United States, I know, you know, can take years as well. But I'm not sure. I think your question might be around, was it because there was doubt over his...
Yeah, were there appeals ongoing?
Yeah. And there were appeals ongoing. I mean, certainly the sister was fighting for him to be acquitted all along.
Mm.
Look, eventually it happened. 2014, he was let out, and now he's 10 years later.
Yeah, 10 years later, that happened. Yeah. And can you appeal, or appeals fairly rare in Japan,
apparently,
or common?
Apparently, appeals for death row inmates are fairly rare. I think this is only the fifth one in Japan's post-war history. So they are fairly rare. I think what's more extraordinary about it is the fact that they still have it in Japan. I'd say that would surprise most people.
Yes, yeah. And how do they execute people?
They hang them.
Wow. Okay. God, it's all kind of grim, really,
it
if
is,
you think
yeah.
about it. But of course, because of so many decades later, they have no idea who murdered this poor family.
No, at this stage, they don't, no.
Yeah. Right, Cameroon we're going to go to next. Well, or Norway, at least, where a separatist leader has been arrested.
Yeah, every six to nine months we check in on Cameroon with the ongoing conflict there. There's a separatist movement in Cameroon. Two provinces, basically, of Cameroon are English-speaking, and they've, for the last number of years, they've wanted to move away from the rest of Cameroon, right? And it is based very much on the fact that they're Anglophone rather than Francophone.
Mm-hmm.
The desire to move away from the rest of Cameroon has been around ever since Cameroon's independence in the 1960s. But it really came to a head in about 2016, right? Lawyers and teachers went out on strike. There was a reaction by the government to that was a little bit violent. And then various different separatist movements that had been staying quiet for a long time began to get active again, right? And it's resulted in approximately 1 million people being displaced and about 6,000 people dying, right? And one of the leaders of this particular separatist movement is a man by the name of Lucas Ayaba Cho, and he was arrested last Tuesday on what his lawyer interestingly said were charges based on his various expressions on social media. So straight away you can see the lawyer is trying to go down the freedom of speech route here, in terms of his defence. And that's what he's probably going to try. But there's a little bit more to this 52-year-old than meets the eye. And from Norway, where he obviously lives in exile, he orchestrates an awful lot of the campaigns that happen in Cameroon. And these are the charges that have been levelled against him. The Cameroonians, the Cameroon government have asked various governments to try and get these people, arrest them and send them back. And that is what appears is going to happen. And it might happen quite quickly that he'll be extradited back to Cameroon to face charges.
Oh, and is there an extradition agreement between Norway and Cameroon?
It's an interesting one because there was a representative from the government of Cameroon who said that Norway and Cameroon had an arrangement in place to send them back. And the lawyer has said that he's not aware of any arrangement.
Yes.
But I'm gonna go with the Cameroon official on this one, I think, say that he will probably be extradited quite quickly.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But you know, that said, you know, he will get a defence in European court, Norway, and so he might have a chance there, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, just because, and when you've talked about this before, human rights abuse is left, right and centre, that perhaps one wonders, is this lawyer going to say, well, if when he goes back to Cameroon, he could be facing cruel and unusual, etc., that might prevent...
It's inevitable. The only thing I would say in the defence, not that I wanted to necessarily be defending them, of the government of Cameroon, is that they have had people extradited before from other parts of the world, not from Europe, from Nigeria. 47 people were extradited there about 3 or 4 years ago. Now, I don't know how they ended up, but again, I don't know if the parameters are the same, if Nigeria or Norway would have the same parameters.
The
bar is as high. But I would imagine they'd have some level that they have to go by.
Yeah. But that conflict is ongoing in Cameroon. There's no real way of turning it into a federation or some sort of apparent way of figuring it out.
Well, at the moment, there doesn't seem to be. I mean, these two provinces, and there's a lot of people within these provinces who don't support the separatist movement, it should be said, because, you know, they go in and they impose taxes on them and they can make life very difficult. I think before... for about 2 years in the late 1950s, early 1960s, there was a type of federation, as far as I know, I'm open to correction on this, and then they were merged. And Paul Biya has been there for a very, very long time. He's there since the 1980s at least.
Yeah.
And he has gradually eroded this sense of federation or any independence that this Anglophone side of the country had, and that's what they're not happy about. There was a degree for a long time of recognition of the Anglophone culture, but that has gradually been eroded, and that's what they're not happy with. That's the root of it.
Yeah. Bolivia, we're going to go to next, where an ultimatum has been issued. By who, to whom?
Yeah, this is a bizarre story and slightly disappointing story. I was always a bit of a fan, I have to say, of Morales until he went mad.
the way.
Yeah, it is often the way, isn't it? It's so disappointing sometimes. So Evo Morales has issued this ultimatum, basically. Last week, or maybe about 10 days ago, he initiated what he called a march to save Bolivia. This was a 200-kilometre march from the countryside to the capital, La Paz, where he delivered a speech and basically gave this ultimatum, saying to the president, Luis Arce, that he needed to make cabinet changes within 24 hours or face the wrath of thousands of protesters who had joined him on this particular march, right? So what seems to have happened is that there was protests and there was counter-protests, and of course they all ended up throwing fireworks at each other and rocks and stones. Dozens of people were injured, and now we've got a very tense situation in Bolivia. At the root of it is Evo Morales and his ego, and I suppose the slightly lesser ego of the current president, Luis Arce. These guys used to be friends. So Luis Arce was minister for finance, as far as I know, or economics minister, one of that type of thing. under Morales, and they were very, you know, good friends. And when Evo Morales was kicked out of the country in 2019, it was Arce, when he was elected president, who said, hey, come back home, okay, and to much fanfare. But he thought that he could keep Morales in his pocket and that he would just be a figurehead, and it hasn't gone like that at all. So now the two of them are vying to become the presidential candidate for the next elections, which are taking place later this year or early next year.
Right, okay.
And that's the crux of the matter. And, you know, even though Morales is constitutionally barred from running again, and when he ran in 2019, it almost caused a civil war, he's not backing down, and he's a terrible man altogether. He needs to calm down and just retire, I think.
Yeah, but that sounds like a political stunt,
From Morales, 100%. Yes. And the problem is, for Luis Arce, is, well, there's two problems. Morales is still very popular because he did well when he was running the country, at least for the first 10, 12 years. Mm. And also, the economy at the moment is in big trouble. And of course, it's easy to blame it on the current president.
Of course, yeah. Yes. He doesn't need to do much, really, to have a shot. At least a lot of people are texting in who seem to be experts on the Japanese legal system. Apparently, you don't know if you're on death row. You find out that day.
Yeah, a couple of hours in advance, apparently so, yeah.
So you just live for decades thinking any day could be your last day.
Terrible stuff.
That's extraordinary. Finland we're going to go to next. Visiting lots of Nordic countries today. And pandas are expensive to keep, are they?
They sure are. But I suppose in Finland, all those Nordic countries are very expensive anyway. But when you consider this particular zoo, now these were two pandas that were sent by China back in 2018, and they were supposed to be there for 15 years. They've lasted 6. So this is Lumi and Piri, who were sent under this panda diplomacy that the Chinese are very good at. As I said, they were meant to stay for 15 years, but this zoo in Finland, the Ahtari Zoo, is sending them back. And they're basically saying that inflation and the debt linked to the COVID pandemic is the reason for the panda's eviction. They can't afford them. And when you look at the prices, it's actually bike shed-esque what they're looking at here. So the curator said that it costs 1.5 million per annum for the upkeep, which, quote, was much more than all other species combined. He said that the enclosure cost over 8 million euros to build. And so they just don't have the money for it anymore. So they're sending them back. Now, governments have come out, made a statement, and basically said, look, this is a business decision made by the zoo. We didn't get as many visitors as we thought. Hmm. There's no problem between Finland and China, so it's not going to cause a diplomatic spat. And the Chinese embassy have come out and said, look, we knew this was happening. There's no problem here. We're not going to go to war with Finland over the two pounds.
Okay, well, that's a relief.
At least somebody's not going to war.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Ghana, we're going to go to next. This is an interesting law that they've just signed.
Yeah. I thought it was, a bit of good news to end on in a way.
Yeah.
This was an Affirmative Action Gender Bill. The Affirmative Action Gender Bill 2024 was signed into law on Thursday by the President, Nana Akufo-Addo. Okay, and what they're trying to do with this, they're seeking to ensure that there will be a 50-50 gender parity in public posts and parliament by the year 2030. Now, at the moment, Ghana has 15% female representation in their parliament. Now, just for comparison, the Dáil has 22.5. What they're trying to do here, I think, there's a couple of things, because both political parties have got behind this, right? And there's an election coming up there, and I think that they're trying to target, both trying to appeal to women and get their votes, right? So that's the first thing. I think there's also, in the neighbourhood, there's a lot of this going on. So Rwanda would be famous for this apparent gender equality that happens in Parliament, and they're aiming for that. So Uganda, Burundi and Mozambique have some similar bills that they passed as well. The only problem with this is that inevitably the laws are often behind the culture, right? So there's still an awful lot of misogyny in the society, as you can imagine. They still have overall relatively low incidence of female genital mutilation in the country. Is about 4% overall, but in various different parts of the country, it's up to 80%.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
So it's one of these pieces of legislation that is trying to get ahead of the culture, but the culture is the thing that needs to change, and this is the law that will hopefully instigated would be the catalyst.
Does this law have teeth? It's not like in Ireland where it's just all aspirational rather than anyone's going to really suffer.
Yeah, so anyone, well, the law says anyone obstructing this can be jailed for up to a year. So what you know, the proof of that obstruction is remains to be seen. We'll have to get a test case and then we'll be able to test if it does indeed have teeth.
Okay, interesting. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Well, look, it's all eyes on Israel and Iran and what they do next. Mm. That's going to be the big news over the next coming weeks. A little bit lighter, Coldplay have a new album on Friday that's coming out.
Was that going to be their last? Didn't they say they were going to break up?
After 12. Is this the 12th album?
I'm not
100% sure. Yeah. I can't remember. I stopped after the first one. Donald Trump is returning to Butler. They tried to assassinate him.
Yeah.
He's going back for a rally. Unbelievable. And then on October the 6th, there's presidential elections in Tunisia. So Kais Saied, him winning that is a foregone conclusion. He's setting himself up as dictator for life there.
Okay. So, well, election in inverted commas. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Thanks, Sean.
As ever, Jonathan de Burka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.